What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live over at Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube or Facebook. Or maybe you're listening later wherever fine podcasts are sold. It's all good. And we're excited to see you. We have a packed show for you this evening.
Yeah. I love it. So many
guests on the show.
It reminds me of the old days, back when we used to meet in person and sit together with an array of guests. Remember that?
No.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we should either tell our guests to sit all on a couch together, if we can do that. That might be tough because they're in different places. Or we could sit on a really uncomfortable chair to get that experience of our live show, right?
Oh, man.
Really?
One show that's just really falling apart.
We sat on a couch the whole time, Alex. You had to, you put yourself center stage in an uncomfortable chair so you could stay fresh.
I did. That's true. I'm in an uncomfortable chair right now, so I still got the feel of it. Real quick, before we bring our guests in, I wanted to mention, actually, this week's drink right up top.
Mm. Cool. Oh, you want to put it up top?
I want to put it up top. You made it, Justin. So this is Stray Bullet, our CBC chef.
Stray Bullies! Chef.
He makes a drink every week. Either he curates something or he creates something himself. This week, it was actually created by one of our Patreon members, Grace.
Yeah.
When she got wasted, I think, on a live stream. Is that what happened? Yeah.
A lot of times, that's when you're the most creative, especially when it comes to making up a drink. It's like that time, Alex, we were at San Diego, and we invented this drink called Warm Tequila in Jim Lee's bar.
That was a good drink.
That's creative.
Too. Yeah, that was a great drink. Anyway, this is called... it was posted on Insta, Stray Bullet explains. So this is Campari and Mezcal and pineapple juice and what's the...
Ancho Reyes bitters.
Yes, Ancho Reyes. Very good, delicious sounding cocktail. We decided to call it in honor of Stray Bullet's favorite movie of all time, The Menu. It's called Grace's Bullshit. That was his name. He came up with it. It wasn't me at all. I didn't tell him to do it or anything.
I mean, all he talks about is how great the menu is and how
he loves it. As a professional chef, he's like, I enjoy this movie and I respect it and appreciate people talking about it.
I co-sign it, is what he said.
Well, anyway, great cocktail. Apologies to Grace, who is awesome. And thank you. If you want to be embarrassed, join our Patreon, I guess.
Oh, wow. What a
pitch. That's not the feature. We do other stuff, too. We embarrass Pete.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I just looked over at Facebook, and due to some quirk, I'm currently broadcasting the room above my head live.
Oh.
So I'm going to end that.
A lot of room up there.
Yeah. A separate, you got a separate camera just for
the head cam?
Yeah, it's not letting me end the video. It's just going, man.
Cool.
That's cool. That's weird. Are we part of it too?
I'm
going to close it down. Hopefully, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe it's just broadcasting above my head. We have a bunch of great guests, as I mentioned. So why don't we bring in our first one here.
He is
the creator of Final Nine, comic all about poker. Anish Patel. Anish, hello. Welcome to the stream.
Hey, welcome.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks for chatting. I teased earlier that we had a guest who was on late past their bedtime. That is you. Thank you for staying up late for us. We appreciate it.
No problem.
This book is on sale on Amazon right now. You are selling it as the first comic book about the world of poker. Where did that start? Why poker? Are you a poker fiend? Are you a professional poker player? What's the deal?
it was a very long time ago. It's back in 2008, actually, when I was writing down some ideas. I used to work in TV, and the opportunity of trying to just make my own stuff, I was putting down some ideas. And at the same time, I was playing poker just with friends, and I really enjoyed playing poker with my friends, sitting around the table, doing a podcast or something, just having a chat, bantering with each other, teasing each other while you're playing the game and everything. And I always liked the great story of each poker hand and everything, so just like... It made it fun. It made it enjoyable. We talk about those hands the following weeks later when we play again, and it just builds up all that stories and stuff. And then when I was putting some ideas down, I had, funny enough, the TV on. It had a poker show, and it was about the World Series of Poker main event final. And even though I wrote down a kind of saying, I want to do a poker story, but at that time it was just saying poker story. Never knew what it was going to be about, and I just put it down. And then I was watching this TV show in the background, and I really got involved in that show because it was going through each characters, talking about the poker game, the tournament it was airing, and about Vegas. So I just put it down. I'm like, yes, this sounds like a great story. And then I think a while later, I was like, what kind of format should I put it in? And again, I think that time was, I was reading the Watchmen graphic novel at that for the first time. And what I loved about the graphic novel was it was brand new superheroes. For me, it was brand new superheroes. Even though it came out in 1985, these were brand new characters that no one even heard about unless you read that book. And because they were new, you didn't know who the main character was. And that really helped me drive towards writing a book about nine players around a poker table. But there's no main character. It's based on those nine characters. And I wanted the readers to kind of understand each character and then kind of support someone and say, I'm rooting for this player and I want to know if they're going to win or not. So that's where it all started from. So been a journey so far.
Yeah, it has that sort of like the ensemble, like an Agatha Christie novel or like a Knives Out, more modern reference, where it's like you have your players.
You want to see. Just about to say, the way I pitched the book to a lot of people, I've done a few Comic Cons in last year, and the way I pitched the book, I go, it's like a murder mystery. You don't know who the winner is until the final few pages. And that's where I hold it on to. I go, it's all about the characters, it's all about the games, the game itself, and that drives the story.
And if you weren't too familiar with poker, how did you do research? Did you high stakes, big bets, or did you just get your friends together and be like, hey, this is research. We have to do this.
It was a bit of both. It was a bit of both, yeah. A lot of the hands that are mentioned in the book are real-life hands that I played with my friends. Some of the kind of celebrations or the banter was live from what playing for years. But then the rest of the research around the tournament, the structure, the format, the tournament itself, that was research, full-on research. And the good thing about doing that research was, YouTube was great, Facebook was great. It was part of the online world, so you get a lot of information out, a lot of articles, and just keep reading about each player. So, that's how it kind of started off with some of those hands and poker generally.
Have you had any sort of response from the poker world about it? Either people fact-checking you or excited about it or anything like that?
It's a slow start. Yeah, I've released the book last July, and the aim is to kind of go into all the poker tournaments, small, doesn't matter how big they are, like the poker rooms you get, that they do daily or the big tournaments or semi-big tournaments, and just approaching them and seeing if I could just promote. So I did go to a poker tournament a couple of weeks ago in the UK and spoke to a few people as well as players, and they got quite excited about it, which was great. I was sitting down having a few drinks, just chatting. I handed over the book, and he was a very popular poker player. He's made great earnings over it, and every time another poker player came to have a chat with him, he was just introducing me and showing the book, and that was great. It just felt like, let me just hand it over and let these guys get excited about it. So I was like, and exactly what I needed, really.
Have you tried to bet with a copy of the book? Like, raise that?
There will be times. I was thinking to do that in Comic-Con. I'm like, look, high card wins, and if you beat me, here's a book kind of thing,
Oh, nice, yeah.
I don't think that's a great business term, but, maybe I'll do something similar, give them a 20% discount or something, something similar like that.
You got to go all in on the sequel. Like, get a couple publishers at the table and bet for the next round of the book.
Yeah.
I think you touched on this a little bit before, but now have you gotten into poker? Have you started to pick it up yourself?
Playing for, on and off for years. I mainly play with friends, but I do go to certain when I've got time, I go to certain poker rooms and play either cash games or tournaments. Tournaments do last a lot longer than just sitting down, putting your money in, and once you're happy to go, you leave. But in a tournament, you have to realize that you're starting from the beginning, and if you want to win, you have to, you know, expect to be there for 6-7 hours, even longer, depending on the size of the tournament. And I do get excited about those games. Last time I went, probably last year sometime, I was there for a good 6-7 hours, but I got to the near the end and I was quite excited that I'm like, well, I think I still got it. but of course I'm not playing against the big pros, which I hope I do one day.
Awesome. You know, it's no problem being a big fish in a small pond. Like, my main gambling game is Candyland, and I crush at it. Like, I walk away with all the candy corn at the table.
Wow. Baller.
And Anish, this is available on Amazon right now. Are there any other places folks can pick it up?
At the moment, it's on Amazon. We're looking at kind of different options on selling the book in different websites and stuff. I think what Amazon has done for the independent self-published people is they're the ones who fulfill it for me, which is great. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know about this, but you know, they allow you to upload a digital version and then upload your hard kind of the format of that they can print for you, so anywhere in the world can order it and they fulfill it for you. It kind of helps me. I don't have to print 500 copies and leave it at home and then try to send it out across the world where Amazon's there to fulfill it.
Yeah. Well, cool. Anish, congratulations on the book. Very fun. Very excited to play a game of Go Fish against you.
Oh, wow.
If we ever meet in person. I don't do poker. I'm bad at it. But congratulations on the book.
Alex. Maybe you need to read the book.
Bro.
What if I become a real card sharp?
Yeah, I think it's gold.
I don't know. I've seen your poker face, Alex. I think you have a tell. Yeah, the double hands on the cheeks is a huge tell.
Yeah, I call it my Home Alone move. All right, Anish, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night. Thanks for staying on late. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Later.
See ya.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Final Nine. It is out now on Amazon from Anish Patel, the first poker comic book. So there you go. Why don't we bring in our next guest here? He has a new book that is up on Zoop called
Zoop.
Sex, Spies, and Rock and Roll, Volume 3. Jeff Messer, everybody. Jeff, hello. How are you? Oh, you're muted. Wait, here, I'm going to unmute you. There we go. We got this. No.
Nice.
We don't.
There we go. All right.
There's Jeff Messer.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Hello. Thanks so much for coming on.
I spent my previous life as a famous mime.
It shows. Mm-hmm. Alex was like, he didn't hear you, but I felt you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I didn't need
trapped in the box and the rope work there. Impressive.
It's it's a little rusty, but I'll stick to comic books for the time being.
Smart.
So, Sex, Spies, and Rock and Roll, Volume 3, it is up on Zoop now. You got 23 days left as of this current taping, if you're listening to it later on the podcast. Maybe there's less days left, I don't know. And you also have over $6,000 of the $10,000 you're looking to get to support the project, which is very cool.
But 1 week and 60%.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's fast math.
Yeah.
The other thing that's probably important to mention that I think people probably picked up on for the title, but this is the third volume. The first two volumes, very fun collections of different, as you can tell from the title, sexy spy stories. It was very interesting looking through these in particular to see the evolution, I felt, from the first volume to the second volume, where the first volume has a bunch of spy stories in it, and they're very fun and enjoyable. The second one seems much more focused on, like, we got to have sex, spies, and rock and roll in every story.
Pay off that title.
What was it like pushing that, and where is it going in volume 3?
I stick to the FDA soup labeling process. the ingredients have to be listed in order of dominance.
Sure. Smart.
So there's sex, and then there's spies. The first book was a complete surprise to me in how successful it was going to be on Kickstarter initially. And what happened along the way was what started out as one main feature story and two backup stories. Once we funded and kept hitting stretch goals, I kept adding another backup feature story and another and another and another. And it sort of got out of control and turned into more than double the size of what I had originally intended and became a full anthology book. And so between the first and the second volumes, I really tried to hone it in, you know, create the tether between the stories and the universe so that everything, you know, by the time all this is done, if you read it all, you go, oh, everything connects in some way. And there's a through line that flows between the stories that are happening in the 80s and the stories that happen in the 70s and the stories that happen in a more contemporary timeline. So it's been kind of fun on the spot sort of defining that. But yeah, the second volume, I'm really, really proud of because I think it's all very strong work. And some of the stuff in the first volume was just a lot of fun, slapping stuff against the wall to see what stuck. And I had a couple of pledge levels where people could be drawn as characters in the book that people wanting to do. And so there's one backup story in the first book that is entirely created just to facilitate because I ran out of places to stick people. And so I'm like, hey, I'll just do five more pages and have kind of a lark in that first book. And one of the things that happened between the first and the second was what we're seeing on the screen now is the main feature, the reason I started this project, a story that I originally wrote in high school and has been laying around in the dustbin for decades that has been revisited. And I kept it in the 1980s because spies in the 80s, a lot more fun, the music, the fashion, a lot more fun, kind of kitschy. I thought I could have more fun with it as a period piece. But this main feature has now officially spun off into its own solo title. So it's no longer part of the anthology book because I can now support 64 pages of content without this feature in there. Wow. So I've very quickly sort of expanded the universe, if you will, for these characters. And it's you can see it's all, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek, a lot of fun, a little silly in places. Some of it gets a little darker than other bits and pieces of it, but for the most part, it's just sort of that high-octane 80s action movie kind of concept, you know, that you would see. And just a lot of fun. And I think that's... And I'm living my second childhood now that I've revisited it. So, you know, it's kind of great. And my son, who's in college now, one of the reasons it turned into an anthology, too, was I found out when he was at home during high school and COVID that he was working on a screenplay. And he gave me a copy and I read it. And I was like, oh, my God, this is like the garbage I was writing when I was 17. And then it reminded me of this garbage I was writing at 17. And I was like, man, that stuff was a lot of fun. Let me really kind of dust it off. And I included his story in this book as well.
Cool.
So he's got his screenplay is being turned into one of the anthology stories that's running through the book. Yeah, you know, and it's just weird things come. And when... new ideas come along or the idea of characters I had back in the day when I was writing this originally who were just minor supporting characters, now I get to tell their backstories. And those become great anthology books too of like, hey, how did they become spies? Let's go back 5 years and tell this story. And the artists that I'm working with are just an extremely enthusiastic, talented group of people from all around the world. It's amazing what a pandemic and the internet can do to bring people together. But man, these artists are having so much fun and they keep asking me, hey, what's the next script? What's the next story? And so it's been constant since about 2 years. This January of 2021 is when I really kicked it into gear. And now on a daily basis, I'm getting new pages, new art, working on new scripts. And the third volume is finished and ready to go. The fourth volume is halfway completed, and I have three solo individual issue comics that are in the can just waiting to be used. So the enthusiasm of these artists has really kept me going, and I'm like, oh, I've stockpiled all this material now so that I can do the next two Zoop campaigns and still be ahead of the game. So I'm having the most fun I've had in years creatively doing all this stuff.
Well, congrats.
That's so awesome. Cool. And I do think the artist, you can, it matches the tone in such a great way, in yeah. different ways across the board. But I want to ask, when ideas like this that are so long gestating, when you have them when you're young and you're like, I got to finally do that. Do you have like notebooks filled with these ideas? Or were they in your head this whole time? And how did you reinvestigate them when you finally were like, I'm doing it?
The stories I originally wrote when I was in high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, I looked like I was the best student in the class because I had notebooks and I was just like, nah, 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 nah. Every class, the teacher's like, he's like transcribing word for word everything I'm saying. How is he not making straight A's?
Wait, this is all sex stuff. This guy's writing sex stuff in the back of the class.
Back then, it was less sex and more spies and a little bit of rock and roll. But, I'm having to compete with modern audiences a little bit here. So I had to juice it up some. But, all those. I have crates in my downstairs storage that are full of spiral-bound notebooks with all of the original handwritten.
Wow.
Originally, they were going to be novels. I thought, I'm going to be a spy novelist, and I'm going to create a series of spy novels, and it's going to be the next best thing on the planet. And my cousin who lived next door was my co-conspirator, egging me on, write this or do this or whatever. And I thought about, in the 90s, like 10 years after the fact, when I was in my 20s, I tried to sit down with a word processor computer to take all those written notes and make an updated version of it, if you will. And I got maybe 3/4 of the way through it, and life got in the way. And I got tired of writing prose. Oh, my God. Describing stuff can get tedious. And so I spent 20 years as a playwright. I just shifted over to working in theater, and I wrote scripts and did a lot of theater stuff. And then I sort of came back to comics. Well, I came to comics in the past 5 or 6 years and just decided, it'll be fun for me to give this a try. I accidentally got nominated for an Eisner in 2019 and went to San Diego. And as I was leaving, I was like, I feel like I'm getting nudged by the cosmos that maybe I should do this. And one of the first things I did was revisit this stuff in my mind just to remember, to see if I could remember it, Yeah. And I worked in theater, so I have a pretty good memory as far as, lines and dialogue and stuff. So I spent weeks just sort of going through my head, trying to remember who was what and where was where. And I made notes and things like that. And I'm happy to say, I only flipped through all that previous stuff once as a refresher. I didn't even fully read it. I just kind of skimmed through it and then realized 70% of it doesn't work for a comic. So I need to just, bullet point everything down to an outline and then create sort of a new comic-friendly script out of it. And the idea of making it more adult, certainly to appeal to crowdfunders and people who support those campaigns. But my goal was, instead of it being a TNA book that was just all, you got it and you started reading it and went, this sucks. This is terrible. I was like, I want people to think they're getting that kind of book. And then when they get it, go, holy crap, this is actually kind of fun and interesting. And it's a good read. So my goal was to lure those people in, but also, appeal to the mainstream sort of spy audience.
And I hope you're able to brush up on 10th grade biology when you were going through your notes. Because that's good information, social studies. Yeah.
Frogs, what's going on with frogs?
I could see it on the page. It was that identic memory. I could see on the page and go, this was what I wasn't listening to when I was writing this.
Yeah.
Came back to the teacher's face in front of me and everything just glaring down at me.
Boy.
So,
yeah.
I am curious, you were successful on Kickstarter twice. Why move it over to Zoop?
It's kind of great. The guys from Zoop approached me. And I also work with, I bury the lead here, but I also work with Mike Grell, the comic artist and creator. And I've been a fan of his since I was a kid. I became a friend of his about 10 years ago, and I convinced him to try Kickstarter because I'd seen it and I had heard it. And I was like, this seems like a good idea. And we did a couple of campaigns with him, or I did, worked with him and some other guys to do a couple of campaigns that were really successful. And that was my on-the-job training. And I thought, I can do this for my own projects. And I got brave enough to do it, to bring some of my stuff to Kickstarter. And it was successful. His stuff was hugely successful. My stuff was being successful. A certain amount of writing on his coattails, I'm sure, was involved. But, I'm okay with that. And the guys at Zoop emailed me, reached out to me last summer, maybe May, early June. And Jordan from Zoop was like, hey, I'm going to be at HeroesCon. I see that you're going to be there and that Mike's going to be there. I'd love to talk to you about what we're doing. And he came over and introduced himself, and we chatted, and I struck up a conversation. You know, Mike is older and a little more leery sometimes of people coming up and going, hey, Mr. Grell, I'm going to tell you the next best thing in the world. He's like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm more of a gullible type, so I said, hey, you know what? I'll do a small campaign with them, and we'll test it out and see, and then you know, get the results from what I'm doing and decide if it's something that you want to do. Because they handle fulfillment and they handle the logistics and printing and things like that that you handle on your own at Kickstarter. And I will tell everyone right now, I am terrible at going to the post office. And the post office hates me because I come in with 20 Gemini mailer boxes at a time and clog up their day. And I'm just like, man, if I could just be creating, if I could just be doing the work. And Zoop went, ta-da, poof, here you go. That's what we do.
I feel so like this must is the, be doing something right.
This is the theme of the show, though, because Anish was like, go to Amazon because they print your stuff. And Jeff, you're like, go to Zoop because they take care of your mailing.
I'm listening to that Amazon thing, too, when he talked about international, because one thing the pandemic brought us was higher shipping costs overseas that have not gone back down and higher printing costs. So if you're doing it all yourself, your price increased substantially in the past couple of years. So the idea of Amazon printing and, you know, print on demand in country wherever Amazon is, and let's face it, we thought the Amazon was shrinking back in the 80s, and now the Amazon has taken over the planet in more ways than one. But yeah, I think that's a really solid. Here's the thing. Here, you know, the thing I'm taking away from all of this is 15 years ago, none of us could have really done this. You know, that dream of publishing comics was absolutely impossible 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I first thought of it. There just was no way into it. Now, if you have the drive and the ambition and even a, you know, moderate talent, you can get your stuff published. You can absolutely find a way to get it out there. And I think it's very liberating. And Amazon and all of it, and Kickstarter and Zoop and all of these Indiegogos, they're giving access that was not there before. And I think it's one of the most inspiring things. And I've said many times in the past couple of years, the new independent publishers are crowdfunders. Yeah. That's the new independent comics.
Well, to get back to that, then you have, as we mentioned, 23 days left on this Zoop, I guess is what we're calling it.
Zoop, to go. You know, it's,
What can people expect if they pledge?
Well, I've always kind of gone overboard with what you get. So you get a lot of bang for your buck as far as the books go. You're going to get a lot of fun stories. You have the ability to previous backers can get the new volume. And there are a couple of other new solo books that are on there that you can add to the new volume. And you can also go back and pick up Volumes 2, Volume 1, and all of the other stuff that's been printed previous to this. There are five books that have been printed so far, so Volume 3 is the newest, and then there are two other new books alongside that. So you can get any, all of it, digital, print, ever how you want it. Some of the artists are doing sketches, original sketches that you can pick, and those are super popular. There are even a couple of categories where you can be drawn as a character in one of the stories. So, you know, it's very interactive. It's just a lot of fun. So you can get all of that and, as they say, and more, you know, pledge. that's my thing is I just want so much to be doing this. And now that I've been, the door has been, you know, cracked open a little bit and I've just sort of, you know, like shoulder rushed it and knocked it down.
You zoomed
it. I zooped it. I zooped right in there. Maybe that's how we use it. We use it like that. Zooping. It's like a verb.
exactly. Yeah, well, listen, it's awesome. The bonuses are great. The book is a ton of fun. And in case it isn't clear, very much for adults. But if you couldn't figure out for the title.
It is. But it's a lot of it's humorous, though. I will say that a lot of it is done for the sex, because, you know, sex is kind of awkward and really, really funny.
Oh, time. Interesting.
So I use it a lot as humor. Yeah, I've always, I've had
I'm very serious
all my time. Life. I've had so many partners just laugh and laugh and laugh.
Yeah, you know, I usually open with 5 minutes.
Yeah, easily five. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then close.
Justin, you do a tight five right at
a tight five.
100%. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm getting the light. Okay, that's my time.
Who here is from out of town? Show
hands.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the success. Very excited, and fingers crossed. I think you're going to finish it off. And
appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, take care.
Great talking to you, Jeff.
Have a good night.
Take care. Good night.
All right. Once again, that is on Zoop. It's called Sex Spies in Rock and Roll Volume 3. As mentioned, Volume 1 and Volume 2 are gettable as well, but this is a new collection you can check out. And why don't we bring in our last guest of the evening? He is the creator of Super Best Friend, which is also in and of itself, I believe, going into its third issue or third volume, if you were. Jason Inman, hello.
Welcome.
Hello. Hello, good sirs. Hello, my as well super best friends. I'm going to call you that right now, so it's done.
That's sad. I love to hear it.
Oh, man. I got a new best friend today.
Yeah. It's a good day, right?
Yeah. It's going to tell you close the day.
just to lay it out there, because there's a lot of background people might know you from. You do Geek History Lesson, a podcast. I think when we originally talked, you had 450 episodes behind you. More probably now. Also, people might recognize you. You were one of the hosts of DC All Access as well. And now you got Super Best Friend, which is entering its third, right?
Issue?
Yeah, it's volume. What do you call it?
Yeah, it's its third issue. I like to go, like your previous guest, Jeff, was saying, I like to go to Kickstarter, make a lot of fun, give people extras. So when I do an issue, it's a 48-page issue. So like, these are the first two issues right here. Each of them are 48 issues. And the Kickstarter that I'm currently doing is for the third issue, or the complete miniseries, if you will, if you missed the previous two.
Oh, cool.
Well, talk about the concept of the book. I thought it was very fun. It was very, exactly as the title implies, like very sweet as well. Mm-hmm. What was the inspiration behind this?
A lot of the inspiration for this was my old job at DC All Access, because the lead character, Maddie Moore, is a YouTuber. He's a live streamer. His best friend is the world's greatest superhero, Captain Terrific. And his entire YouTube channel / Twitch channel is filming the adventures of his best friend, Captain Terrific. But of course, if you just did that, you know, there would be not enough of a hook there. So in the first issue, he accidentally live streams his best friend's secret identity to the entire world. Woof. And so the entire series is about him having to repair his friendship with his best friend, but also figure out how he can fix his best friend's life. And again, originally this was just a story of, you know, looking at the fondness of Silver Age comic books and Superman and all the Superman archetypes. Mm-hmm. And over the course of writing it, it really morphed into a story of our relationship with superheroes and superhero fandom, and just what is it to be a good friend and what is it to be a best friend? Like, would you sacrifice your entire livelihood for your best friend?
Oof. Yes. Yeah. Oh, was that a question?
Oh, is it? Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, so you missed that show tonight.
This is an intervention almost.
Yes,
this is the final episode of the Comic Book Club, guys. You all have to give it up for each other.
He tore us apart. He revealed too much. Deadly.
It was a good run.
So format-wise, why the 48-page issues? Because I was definitely surprised reading the first one. I was like, oh, that was a good first issue. Oh, there's more. There's a whole other issue in here. So what was the inspiration behind that? Because that feels atypical.
Well, you know, part of it also as well was just to, you know, when you're doing an independent comic book for Kickstarter, you're always competing against the big two, especially when you do superheroes. Everybody will tell you, you know, if you're making an independent comic book, lots of image creators will say, don't do superheroes, because you're automatically competing with Superman and Batman. So one of my ways of competing around that was to say, well, if I give you 48 pages, hey, I'm giving you a little bit more bang for your buck. I'm giving you.
Yeah.
But also a lot of it, you'll notice, I really, at the beginning, a lot of people have asked me this. There's two 22-page chapters in the 48 pages. And I wanted to do that because if you've ever read, like, old Silver Age stories, especially, like, you know, the Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, they all have multiple stories or multiple chapters in each issue. And that's what I wanted to evoke with this.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I know Batman is famously stingy. He'll only do 22 pages. He's
like, I'm out. Now only 20, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Getting that's diva. That's diva behavior right there.
Oh, yeah. He's a 1%er. 1%.
What was it like making the transition from, this feels very stupid to say out loud, commenting on comics to writing about comics?
What's that stupid to say?
Well, I like how you gave up halfway through
the sentence. You bailed on your own question.
Whatever. I don't know. Ask yourself a question, I guess.
Well, I think that's a very valid question. You know, it's funny because part of the reason why... you know, my first comic book was actually, I co-wrote with my wife, actually, which was Jupiter Jet for Action Lab, which was an all, it's basically young girl Rocketeer fights aliens. And that was inspired a lot by, I was talking to all these gentlemen who were, and ladies that were just masters of their class. I mean, you've had a lot of them on your show and stuff. And the more I talked to them, the more I started being like, oh, I can do that. Okay, it hasn't seemed too difficult. Okay. And I'm not saying that I thought at any point that I was better than them. It's just like talking to them and like talking to them in enough interviews kind of like opened up the door to be like, oh, okay, so reveals are uneven pages. Probably don't do more than 6 panels a page. Okay, like splash pages are for... Like it kind of like opened it up. But I will say it's funny, and if you gentlemen ever go down this same road... the interesting thing, and I love the fans dearly, is that I have done signing events, and it's very interesting because you will always have the person come up to you and be like, oh, hey, episode like 196, I really loved it, but do you think in that episode that Superman really would do this in X and Y and Z? And I'll answer the question. I'll be like, oh, that's lovely. Do you want me to sign one of your books? No, thank you. I just wanted to ask you a question about the podcast. And they'll walk away.
Just been holding out of that question for so long.
And you'll be like, come back, please. This is a book signing.
Yeah.
We actually have a question here from the comments. This is from Comics with My Kids. The book looks really cool. What is your target audience, Jason? I am always looking for books for my 9 and 12-year-old kids.
Super Best Friend is the same age, I would say, as Superman. So I would skew it a little bit older.
Really raunchy, really adult.
Yeah. Unlike Jeff, it is very kid friendly. Unlike Jeff's book,
Superman and rock and roll.
Ooh, yeah. Jeff's book sounds awesome, by the way. But no, I would say it's. I would put it around like 10 to like all up and above to like, you know. But I wouldn't go any earlier than 10.
Nice.
Now, this third volume, I keep calling it a volume, this third issue, is that going to close up the story? Do you have plans for more?
It does. So the third issue is, you'll see on the Kickstarter campaign, it is a series finale. This is, you know, if you read in the Kickstarter campaign, this all sort of is like a weird confluence of events because Captain Terrific is like a hero that I came up with in high school.
And that's so funny.
Yeah, and I kind of just put him on a shelf and was like, I don't know, who knows? And then, you know, it was funny because when I was coming up with this idea, I was like, okay, I came up with the idea of Maddie Moore, the person like us who's obsessed with superheroes. And I said, who should he follow? And then that's where I sparked him. I was like, oh, I got this guy that's just been sitting on the shelf. I'm going to put him in there. And so this story is sort of their conclusion. It's like my sort of like love letter to everything Superman, Jimmy Olsen, and also superhero fandom. But I have designed all the supporting characters. There, of course, is a Justice League in this world, and it's called the Assembly. Mm-hmm. And they all have the ability to spin off into their own genres and their own books, if I wanted to return. But for Maddie Moore and the titled Super Best Friend and Captain Terrific, this is kind of my final statement on superheroes.
On friendship. Yeah.
And friendship. Yeah, means it's over. Your show is over. This is the final episode of Comic Book Club. Thanks for all watching. Delete the podcast feeds.
There's a big red button right here, right below my screen, and I press that. That's it for the podcast.
You've gotten so close to pressing it so many times.
I mean, speaking of podcasts, though, as we mentioned earlier, you've got this Geek History Lesson podcast. I think it's pretty straightforward from the name what it's about.
Yes.
But as far as I understand, you focus on one specific thing every episode. At 450 episodes, what inspires those things? How do you still find those specific things to talk about every single podcast?
So if you go back through the feed, yeah, because like next year will be our 10th year of doing this podcast, and that is something I never thought we would get to 10 years. And we generally release we release. Are you guys pretty much weekly now still? Like, or do you take off? Yeah,
we don't.
You seem
take
weekly.
Time off.
No.
Yeah,
we are. We seem weekly. We definitely have a weekly energy.
I never want to assume. Look, we take weeks off too, so I never want to be like, "Look, you do 52 episodes a year, right?" And they're like, "No, 45. Come on, chill."
Yeah. Step out of 10.
the once quarterly podcast. It's funny because we've been doing this 10 years. We did all the big dogs very early on. You know, yeah, we say we explain a character or a concept or a book in a little bit less than an hour. Now we're really chasing, like, what's fun. What's, you know, so, like, this is the year that we're finally tackling, like, Superman Blue. Because I have a long time love of that crazy era, and so I'm like, okay, we're doing Superman Blue, we're doing Icon from Milestone. So we kind of like just try to find the fun stuff. Like, one of the proudest moments on our podcast is last year, we got to have Booster Gold creator Dan Juergens on the podcast for our Boost the Gold episode. And you talked about, I remember before this episode, that you were like, oh, it's fine, we're just like a sailor ship, curse if you like. And we try to keep our podcast Geek History Lesson pretty family friendly, but on our Patreon episode, we opened up the episode with getting Dan Juergens to be like, fucking A, and you're just like, that is something. Might
that's
be
what
it's,
we're here for.
It's going on the resume.
That's awesome. DC All Access. So I don't know if that's like in the rearview mirror for you, but there were a lot of big announcements for DC today from James Gunn. We're going to be talking about them a little later on our Week in Geek podcast that we do for Patreon listeners. But I was curious to hear your take on it. I assume you've seen what James Gunn put out there, what the slate is, the new movie TV slate. What's your big take? What's your gut feeling on it?
My gut feeling is, and I've seen this, I've said this to a lot of groups on fandom, is to don't put the cart ahead of the horse, because if you want to think about this, this is the fourth DC slate that I have seen in my lifetime. We're on the fourth, people, because you want to count what they tried to launch one with Green Lantern, Ryan Reynolds. They tried to, we got the Snyderverse. We were doing a big old reboot with Flashpoint before all of this, and now we're on the fourth. So we haven't seen a trailer yet. We haven't seen pictures from sets yet. We haven't seen, this is literally a publicity announcement. I'm very excited about it. If this happens, the best thing I thought about the whole announcement, it was in the interviews in between that James Gunn did at the event. And he said, we are going to put scripts first. We're going to try not to shoot before a screenplay is complete because we don't want to do extensive reshoots. And if they can pull that off, this might be an astounding, reboot, whatever you want to call it. But to be honest with you, if you want to ask me like which one of the ones I like the most, it's Creature Commandos, because
so weird. Also, they were leading with it, so it sort of feels crazy.
Yeah,
to put
it's
that
Creature Commandos.
There. Yeah.
A couple things on what you said, though, I think it's very funny that we're like, it would be a miracle if they would just finish the script before they started shooting. Fundamental filmmaking practice is to finish writing it before you start shooting it. But
not to interrupt your flow, Justin, but, and not to like blow up what we're probably going to talk more about later, but like, if they actually do that, they're never going to film anything. Like the way that
I agree with Justin. As a person who works, and I will, you know, I don't mean this. My day job is for CBS Television. Mm-hmm. And you will be like rushing drafts of scripts very quickly. But like for movie, you can be a little bit more slower. Like with television, when you're in like a weekly television show, the train is always going.
Yeah.
And you've got to turn to that script. With a movie, you can literally be like, no, we're going to stop production for a month and we're going to rewrite this draft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody just take a break. It's fine.
The other thing I was going to say about carts and horses is I'd like to see a horse. I feel like we've seen exclusively carts. So I'm ready to have one horse run through. Let's see a horse.
You know, it is funny because I am surprised because, like, we're already in this schmegel as it is of I am surprised that one of the things they did announce was like, here comes another Batman movie. And then people are like, well, what about Robert Pattinson? And you're like, ooh, I don't know. Yeah. Elseworld? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
There was this quote from David Zaslav before they announced all of this. This was, I think, back when they brought on James Gunn, where he was saying, well, we're not going to have four Batmans anymore. And the first question was like, which four Batmans are you referring to? I'm not sure. But they announced this, and given everything that they've announced, they have at least two Batmans. They have Robert Pattinson in the Batman Part 2. They have whoever this new Batman is going to be in Batman Brave and the Bold. And then if you count the young Bruce Wayne who was a Joker and is going to be in Joker 2, possibly, that's a third Batman. So granted, he was correct. They're not going to have four Batmans.
What about Flashpoint? You got two more Batmans.
And then there's Batmans everywhere.
There you go.
And then there's the rumor of Ben Affleck being in Aquaman 2.
There you go, five Batmans.
Yeah.
He was telling you, we're not going to have four, we're going to have five.
I don't know. I could have, I honestly, like, you know, and very arrogant of me to be like, James Gunn, this is how you should do it. I honestly am surprised they did announce a Batman movie. If it was me in that chair, and it's a very difficult job, and for both of them, impossible job, I think I would have held off on the Batmans until Robert Pattinson's run was done. Just because, again, we're like I said, we haven't even seen a frame of any of this, and we're already like, well, wait a minute, what about Batman? Which Batman? You know?
Yeah. Well, the stakes are always high with any sort of Batman thing, but I sort of agree, especially when in the announcement it sort of felt like they're like, we're doing another Pattinson Batman one.
Yeah.
That we're not doing three, we're doing two. It felt like they're like, this is the one we already did half the work for, so we're just going to do that. And then we have our Batman stuff.
Well, but he also, Matt Reeves, and who knows what stage of development he's in, but he seemed to be building out this whole universe for that. He had working on the Batman Part 2. He had two TV series that kept shifting and changing, but they're doing the Penguin TV series that's ostensibly coming out, I guess. They didn't mention it anywhere in the announcement, but I think
I would say it's dead now.
Yeah,
based on today,
it's surprising with Colin Farrell in that. Like, that's a big talent to be
right.
Like,
and there was
later.
The GCPD series that they were talking about as Arkham Asylum.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you're all lovely nerds, just like me. Like, I know you couldn't. I know. Look, James Gunn obviously wanted to do the Batman and Son arc, which I love. It's a great arc. But if we put that arc to the side, I wouldn't have had any problem with them being like, oh, yeah, Robert Pattinson is the Batman of this universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%. Well, particularly because, and this is blowing out my spot for later, but like my big problem with the announcement was there was no tone. There was no like, this is what DC is. It was, hey, this is the progression of a couple of things. We have the movies that have already progressed. This is how they're going to fit into this new world. Then we have 10 things, some of which are dated, one of which that has Viola Davis in it, possibly two, one of which I, James Gunn, am writing, and then here's these other things. But I don't know what this new DC universe is. And I would have appreciated, like you were saying, it's an impossible chair to be in. They're in an impossible position. But
well, but I would argue...
I'd want James Gunn to come out and be like, this is what the DC universe is. This is our vision of it. Like, this is our... I don't need 10 unrelated projects that I don't know how they fit together that just have the pictures from the comic books and don't mention the comic book artists anywhere. I need, why is this different?
But I think he can't say that now because he's still dealing with the last picture. And if he's like, here's our tone, and then all these movies come out that aren't that, that messes with the message. I think once we get through all the Flashpoint, the Aquaman 2, all that stuff, then he can be like, here's what we're doing. But I think you get a tease of it. Like, he's got the Themyscira, like, Game of Thrones series. I was like, yo, that's a swing.
Well, that's a wild swing. Yeah, a bit of it was the Gods and Monsters tagline that they put over. But but to what Justin was saying as well, it is very interesting because all those movies that are coming out this year, all the press is basically going to be like, so, your movie story doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Why should we go see this movie? You know? And you're like, wow, I feel so bad for all those filmmakers.
Right. Well, and all the actors, actors are going to be on these junkets being like, I'm so excited for this to be over when then I can forget about all of
this. So this is your final movie as Shazam, or this is your final movie as Blue Beetle, or I know Blue Beetle, so they said they were connecting that in or whatever. But
it's definitely true for Shazam, I will say that.
Yeah. And probably Flash.
Actually, he said the opposite thing in his announcement. He started off with Shazam and was like, well, that's always been off in its own thing, so that can continue in our current thing. He also gave an interview talking about Zachary Levi's tweets, and granted, James Gunn has a very specific experience with tweets, so maybe he has some feeling there, but he was like, no, that doesn't matter. Unless somebody says something really egregious or does something absolutely terrible, I can't police everything that somebody says. So he at least now is saying they're going to continue with Shazam. It sounds like from other interviews he did that Jason Momoa is not immediately moving over to Lobo. They're talking about potentially doing an Aquaman 3 at some point, so that'll continue. He called The Flash one of the greatest superheroes movies I've ever seen. So
I think this is hype. And they have to do this hype. And I think they're doing a good job at keeping the balls in the air before they get to like, all right, let's now do this stuff we want to do.
All of the James Gunn stuff is a masterclass of how to do publicity.
Yeah, he's good.
And that is why that's why James has gotten the movies he's gotten. That's why he's in the position doing this whole thing of announcing the slate before people have probably even been hired to write scripts.
Yeah.
Is a master. Yeah. I agree with Justin. I don't think any movie from this year continues. With the exception of maybe Blue Beetle. Blue Beetle might be the one that can sneak through.
That's fair, and I agree with you. But I also think that's what Marvel does so well. They throw stuff on a board, people talk for years about it, and it's like, so he's like, why don't we do that? I'm going to put some weird stuff up there. I'm going to put some cool stuff up there. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We'll replace the cool stuff that fails with other cool stuff. Let's go. I think that's his whole vibe.
Yeah, it's great. We're going to see all of these movies come out this year. They're going to finish up that slate with The Flash. They're going to move forward into Aquaman 2. They're going to release a Superman movie. James Gunn is going to leave DC to pursue other projects, and then we'll reboot the whole
thing. Don't be so sour. Kevin Feige stuck.
Come back if to he's me in 2025 and tell me I'm wrong.
If he's successful in the first two, if he gets two good swings, he's going to be like, I'm Kevin Feige now. Because he can handle that hype. He can build that. As opposed to all the other people who are too precious and up their own ass.
The best thing about all of this, the best thing, is that James Gunn has been in this position. He has been the director with $300 million and a studio on his back. So if he just hires the right creative, lets them make their movie, like just approves their script and lets them make the movie, because that's been the big problem with Warner Bros. For years, is that the executives keep coming in and basically making them rewrite their movie every scene by scene by scene. And you're like, you can't make a movie that way. You can't make a good movie that way.
Yeah. Great qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to distract too much though from Super Best Friend. So just to
Here, we can just put it in the frame. I'll just hold it there.
So I don't think we mentioned this before, but you're already successful on Kickstarter, which is awesome. You fulfilled your goal, so that's great. I assume at this point you're heading towards stretch goals. Is that in consideration?
Yes. Fun fact. We're heading towards stretch goals. We've already blown past the first one. We've blown past the second one. There's two things I'd love to mention, actually. So I do another thing of the fun of Kickstarter in crowdfunding campaign is I do random add-ons. So if you're a backer in the campaign, I announce random add-ons. I'm like, tomorrow this is going up. There's only a limited one. And one of the cool things, remember earlier I mentioned Den Jurgens? I got a bunch of artists that I really admire to do sketches of Captain Terrific, the Superman of my series.
Awesome.
And this week, I'm going to be dropping this one-of-a-kind sketch by Den Jurgens of Captain Terrific.
Wow, look at that.
Cool.
This is the only one, so it's going to drop on Friday. At what time? You'll have to be a backer to find out. And then I'm doing something I've never done as well. I'm very much a writer, but I like to doodle. And I will show. I haven't shown this anywhere. I was listening to you gentlemen talk to your other guests. I told you I was doodling. At 14K, we unlock a stretch goal for the writer variant cover. Mm-hmm. Oh. So I'm going to draw a variant cover to my own comic book. All right, it's not finished. I don't have a face here. But I was working on the variant cover here.
Oh, wow.
So
that is cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm doing the faces last because they make me nervous. But but yeah, we're blowing there. You know, I always say, like, you know, once a campaign's funded, it just becomes a pre-order campaign. And you just get all the bonuses and stuff.
Awesome. Cool. Jason, anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
No, I mean, superbestfriendcomic.com, geek history lessons everywhere you can listen, everywhere you can say, I gotta bring you gentlemen on there. We just gotta know, like, you gotta know, I guess, Peter, you a Wonder Woman? Do you like Wonder Woman? Like, you're wearing the Wonder Woman shirt, so I gotta pull you. Yeah. Archie, that's great.
Not a great option for this, but yes.
Well, I went black nothing, so there you go.
Yeah.
No, I just say, like, if you've listened to anything I've said, you like my thoughts, come check out my podcast, and sharing the Kickstarter campaign is just as important as pledging, because that can always bring it out to more perspective eyes.
Awesome. Cool. Jason, congratulations on the success. So good chatting with you. Have a great night.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun, guys. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Later.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
All right, there we go. Once again, it is Super Best Friend. It is on Kickstarter right now from Jason Inman. And now we are going to move to my favorite section, because you make it up. It is your audience questions. Whoop. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in Q&A over on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube. And what are you guys drinking? Why don't we do that while we're waiting for questions to come in?
Grace's bullshit. Loved it.
Nice. Pete?
I'm going to make another.
Pete's bullshit.
I'm drinking Speed Wobbles.
Oh, you made that up. You drew that a marker on a you did. Beer can.
I wish I was that good at art.
Excellent. I'm having water again since I'm still not well.
Still?
Not great, man. It's not great.
Oh, no.
But there you go. But why don't we go to some questions here? We got one from
slowly,
Michael.
Slowly dying right before our eyes.
I mean, yes. This is from Michael Tillman. Where's the future of reading digital comics headed with Amazon's Comixology layoffs and eventual closure? Do you see a different platform emerging like a new Comixology? Do Zoop or Substack help fill the void that Amazon has created? Great question, Michael. What do you guys think?
It feels like there's room for upstart. I think Substack is so creator-driven that it's not going to be like that open marketplace that Comixology used to be. But everyone that's Substack, I think, will continue based on different talent. But I think Zoop's making a good case. I mean, we have a lot of Zoop people on this show, so maybe we're a little bit biased. But it does feel like Zoop is really taking care of the creators, especially people who are up and coming. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, hopefully Zoop will Zoop in and save the Zooping day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's going to be a Zoop Soup riot. Yeah.
I think the issue with like a Zoop doing it or a Substack is because of the independent nature, which is their plus for their platforms, right? But the thing that made Comixology work and made it a monster, which drew the attention of Amazon, is having the scale to be able to convince Marvel and DC and to a certain extent Image and Dark Horse and Oni and everybody else to all join together and go on the same platform. So in order to have a new Comixology, I think you'd need something like that. And I don't know what that is. I mean, in the intervening time, Marvel and DC in particular, though they've been arguably successful about them, have spent a lot of time building their own digital platforms. I think I would suggest a kind of like a Webtoon, which actually has probably bigger scale than DC or Marvel. Yes. But DC or Marvel have been putting up their own Webtoon style comics on there. So that's kind of a different thing. So I don't know. It just needs somebody with like a new architecture and a new type of platform that provides essentially the same service as Comixology to come in. And that's a big ask. I'm just not sure.
I also feel like the bigger companies are like, why are we sending our, why do we want to have a reader that isn't us? Like they want to have right. people on their site reading their stuff. So it's
which
like,
honestly stinks, because the idea of Comixology in this prime was you could go to it like it was a comic book shop. And
yeah.
I bought things that I wouldn't normally buy because I was browsing on Comixology, just like you would do walking through a regular store. You're not going to do that on Marvel's proprietary platform. This is from Puncher Joe One over on YouTube. My question, how much of future DC and Marvel movies will focus on more obscure characters? Well, I would say they're running out of non-obscure characters, so probably a lot.
I mean, I would say the transition, especially the MCU, the transition from obscure character to mainstream character happens there. Like Iron Man, Ant-Man, these characters were not top tier pulls, and they are now like the major, like Ant-Man coming out in a few weeks is like literally the movie of the last year, probably, for the future of that. So I think it's all about like, oh, someone has a good story and it really has a great touch point for the larger project we're doing here. So I think sort of anything's fair game, really.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think there was something I was going to add, but I don't remember.
But you really aren't feeling
brain.
Well.
I really
You're
not.
Just like, fuck it. I got nothing.
Whatever. No gas in the tank, folks. Okay, this is great, Bennett. After watching James Gunn's small explanation of things to come for DCU, we had a lot of discussions about how we feel about what's to come. He's talking about on Patreon. My question is, should we all just calm down?
Fuck no. We got to get crazy. We got to be mad. We got to be wound up. That's the whole point of this, is to talk about it. I mean, I think yes, like for real, yes, we should calm down, because yeah. this is a PR statement about something that is, the objectives of this aren't just to tell us their cool stuff. It's to make sure we watch the movies that they've already made that are coming out this year that we have to go see. It is partially to build hype. I believe James Gunn when he says, I'm excited about these things, because it's the enthusiasm is in the choices. Like, to do the Themyscira show is sort of like, that's a weird choice. That's not a, like, I want to get the most eyeballs on this. That's like, someone had a cool idea, and they're like, you know what, let's go for it. And I think that's true of a lot of the other pieces he mentioned today.
I would argue, just to throw it out there with the Themyscira show, that it was like, hey, it's Game of Thrones meets DC, and David Zaslav, who loves franchises, was like, oh, can you put Harry Potter in there? What do you think?
Yeah, maybe, but that's also like, that's if that's their only pitch, that's not going to work.
I just wish, you know, he would just say, listen, you're going to get 20 seasons of Peacemaker and about 85 Suicide Squads, so just buckle the fuck up. I'd be like, great, thank you.
You mean yeah. he should call you personally and say that? Or maybe come into your bedroom and whisper it into your little ear when you go to bed at night?
Every morning, John Cena comes in doing the Peacemaker dance.
Man, glorious. I just think he killed it on that, and I don't want him spread too thin where then things start to slide.
He's going
to
get spread.
He's spread. Yeah. He's spread quite thin.
Yeah, I'm
but his focus is going to be on the Superman movie. That's something mm-hmm. he wants to do. He is clearly making it the centerpiece, and that's his sort of do or die project, I feel like.
Boo.
This is from YouTube. Nelson Martinez says, have you guys seen the trailer for Cocaine Bear? Any interest in the story or movie?
I've been wanting to try Cocaine Bear for quite some time. So. No, I don't know. This was a classic movie that is like probably way overhyped and maybe shouldn't have as much hype, and it should sneak into our lives a little bit more than it is. But I'm definitely going to check it out.
I think it's like a Snakes on the Plane situation where it's just kind of hilarious, and hopefully it'll be a fun movie.
My sourpuss take on it is, regardless of the movie, and I hope if you see it and are excited about it, you enjoy it, but it's based on a true story about a criminal who dumped a bunch of cocaine out of a plane, fell out of the plane, died. A bear ate a bunch of cocaine, went crazy, and died itself. And then they stuffed the bear and put it in a restaurant, and people buy cocaine bear merchandise while looking at its corpse. And that seems a little gruesome and not funny to me.
That's America, baby, right there. That's,
I was going to say the same thing, and that's how I plan to die.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait to be stuffed in a restaurant.
I can't wait to go to your restaurant and be like, I knew that guy.
Yeah, get stuffed with Justin. Well, anyway.
Podcast mic in front. Occasionally you'll like squeeze my hand and I'll say, I'll just go on a rant about Cyclops or something.
All right. This is from Nat Towson, says also about DC movies. I am. Oh, did he end up in the wrong direction? Maybe they did. Also about DC movies. Skeptical of a shared universe between live action and animation, as animation tie-ins are usually pretty stiff and poorly acted. What could Gunn do to make this work? What would you like to see that couldn't be done in a live action only universe? Oh man, I'd love to see like some sort of Roger Rabbit thing where they keep crossing back and forth. Or
dude, that
Cool World.
I had nightmares about that movie.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit, Cool World.
Well, I mean, this is tough because DC does such a great job with the animation normally. And so, you know, again, I'm just worried about things getting... I'm sorry, what?
Do they know? What are you specifically referring to when you say they do it so well?
Well, the Batman the Animated Series was unbelievable.
That was from several decades ago.
Sure. Yeah, you know, there's Doom. There's a lot of amazing...
Doom?
Yeah.
The video game?
No, I'm talking about Batman Doom.
Oh, that one animated movie you watch?
Yeah, there's Mask of the... There's a lot of them that they did really well.
Yeah, Batman, the animated series, Batman, Doom, so many.
But I think what Nat is asking about is the Creature Commandos announcement was like, and they want to be able to do the animated show and use the same voice talent as the live action actors that they would have in the live action project. And I agree. When I read that, I was like, that's a weird idea because you don't really see that. And also I think it's confusing. I think we like our animated stuff animated and we like our live action stuff not live action. So like the crossover just being like, here's this animated show we like, and now you can see them for real, but the same voice talent feels like a weird, like uncanny valley situation.
Maybe. I think it's all right. I mean, it's what Marvel is trying to do with What If, and James Gunn basically framed it in the same way where he talked about, he was like, yeah, and we're really hoping to have the same voices do it, which sounded to me the same way that Kevin Feige was like, we really hope to get Tom Holland. We didn't, but we really hoped to, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's fine. They can go back and forth. It's all good. I know there's an audience for the DC animated movies that are coming out, and they did say that they're going to talk to them and try to figure out how they can make them work together, how they can work together. So there is more coordination there. It just, I don't know. This is where it starts to feel a little janky to me. Things like that, where they haven't really, maybe they've figured it out more than they're saying, but I kind of feel like we probably haven't, the coordination between live action and animation. They also initially said that there was going to be coordination with video games. There was nothing about that in the announcement. And video games take way longer to put together than movies and TV shows. They should have announced that first. Instead, James Gunn, the only thing that I saw him say about it, he was like, I don't know, it'll work like you have a Superman movie come out and a Supergirl movie, and between that, maybe you have a crypto game. And I was like, you got to start working on that right now, James Gunn.
Well, we don't know. Maybe they already have, and like who knows what the actual, what part of the process they're in. But I do agree, like, also, it's a different skill. Being a voice actor is not the same as being a live action actor, and I think the quality of the show will vary if you're
only casting live action people. Don't you feel if you're classically trained, you can do both?
I mean, not really. All the voice actors that we love from our favorite animated shows that Pete was describing are not name movie stars from live action movies.
Kevin Conroy could do both, you motherfucker. How dare you? How
I'm not
dare
saying
you?
He couldn't. I'm saying that he didn't. We didn't get that.
He did. It's in the Arrowverse.
It's true. But I'm just saying, like, it's not the same. To call it to be like, yeah, well, we'll have everybody do everything is sort of like, well, the whole point of it is, like, it's different. So, like, if you want to be the best, just make it the best and don't worry so much about all of this being one thing.
This is why the wheels are going to come off. I'm sorry. They're going to make a Superman movie, they're going to make a Batman movie, and then they're going to reboot the universe. I'm sticking with that. They're prove gonna, me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, the wheels kids. Will stay on. It's very funny to me that you're so convinced the wheels will come off when Marvel, the wheels have been on. The yeah. creative, that the wheels the aren't running quite
exception.
So good.
That is the one exception.
And the wheels of the bus, only, they go round and round.
My only defense for the wheels coming off is, as Jason pointed out earlier in the show, the wheels have come off multiple times throughout history. So I'm only basing it on very recent, very frequent history when it comes to DC.
Well, if you're driving a car and the wheels come off four times in a row, I'd make sure that fifth time those wheels are going to work. And if you bring in a whole new
you're
guy...
You're staying with the same car, though. Just changing the wheels.
I'm sorry, it's the car that they have. And I would be like, okay, this time we're bringing in some people who understand wheels. And the wheels got to stay on. And it feels like their whole thing this time is like, okay, the wheels have to stay on this time. And maybe we get a horse. Bring in a horse.
Yeah, we're going to, just to be clear, we're using at least one of the wheels from the previous iteration with the wheels that work. That's still there. But as soon as that wheel falls off, we'll replace it with a new wheel and it's fine.
What they're going to do is
part of that wheel will become part of one of the new wheels.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that's fair. And to the Ezra Miller wheel is committing crimes while the car is going. Just to be clear,
rolling around town, just straight up murdering old ladies and stuff. All right, real quick here. This is from Scott Carpenter. What comic that is below number 25 do you think will hit 100, or have we seen the last of a run of lasting that long?
Wow. I think it's two different questions for like the major companies. The reboots do seem to be coming faster and faster. And then for the like in Image Comics, you go to 100 is usually pretty shocking. So like, I don't know. I think it is less likely that we will see a comic go that hard.
Yeah, because they get picked up for TV shows after like the first issue. So it's really hard to keep a comic going.
Well, I mean, I think there's that, but there's also like we're saying, they keep getting rebooted. They are creator-owned, like Pete is sort of intimating there, so they have an endpoint in mind anyway. But I don't think we see the last of it. You know, we're going to see some sort of Walking Dead that's an enormous hit that just goes on for a while. Just going to be a couple of years until it happens.
Yeah. Yes, I think Radiant Black, which is at issue 21 this week, will hit 100.
Interesting.
That's my... call from right.
I guess we'll see. How about this? Why don't we make a bet? What do you think is going to end first, Radiant Black or James Gunn's
My Life.
DC James Gunn's DC Universe?
Wow, Alex, you got a real heater on about this. Yeah, you want to see you're ruined for failure, and I'll tell you why, Alex. That is no good. That is no good.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, that's sort of a long, because Radiant Black to get to 100 is how many more years? Lots. It's at 21.
It's math.
80
it's
more
math.
Issues? Yeah. That is what? 7 more years? So that's a lot.
So which one are you going with? Radiant Black or James Gunn's DC Universe, Justin?
Sorry, you 6 more years.
You seem pretty bullish on James Gunn going the distance, going longer than Marvel. He's
going
1,000 years, James Gunn.
Well, James Gunn is a little different because I think he might eventually go pursue other things. I give James Gunn a 5 years, though, of solid work there. So it's a little bit less than Radiant Black at 100, but
all right,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Radiant Black is going to run longer than James Gunn at DC. We're in total agreement on exactly everything. All right, this is from Kevin. What are your favorite depictions of games in comics? What are games you want to see done in comics? Oh, boy, I'd love to see a Marvel Snap comic. I actually think they will do that at some point, probably.
I'd like to see a Super Mario movie, you know? But then they cast things that really make people upset, and then... but the animation's really good, but then they kind of redo butts, you know?
Redo butts?
Yeah.
What do you mean by redo butts?
Well, yeah, Mario's butt caused a lot of controversy, so they had to make it a little flatter.
Oh, he had too much of a bubble butt?
Yeah. Yeah, a little too much.
You were getting too horny for Mario.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nice.
Man.
Cool.
I feel personally attacked by that comment.
Well, that answers Kevin's question, I think.
Backgammon.
Backgammon.
Oh man, I was going to say, where's my Q-Bert comment?
Great.
What do you like about Q-Bert? The swearing? Just the swearing?
Yeah.
I love his bubble butt. I got to be honest.
Always the swearing.
From Stanley, still talking about the James Gunn stuff over on YouTube. Are you excited for adapting Tom King's Supergirl series into a movie? First of all, this, Stanley, this is not to put you on the spot, but this was bugging me all day from this DC announcement.
You're so bothered.
No, I am bothered. It's Tom King and Bilkis Evely, who was on the art. And it particularly bugged me. Like, I understand the varieties of the THRs and everything being like they're adapting Tom King's storyline. Even though they should know better, they don't know necessarily better. I even kind of understand James Gunn's announcement because he was working on the writing. Tom King was part of the writer's room where they're fleshing out the story. That he was like Tom King's great Supergirl woman of tomorrow. But DC sent out a press release being like, hey, here's a link to some of the comics that might have inspired these storylines. And they were like, check out Tom King's run on Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow. That pissed me off. That I was like, you couldn't spare the extra characters to put Bilkis Evely, who is integral to this run, let alone the other one that I thought...
That art was...
phenomenal. The other one that I thought was absolutely hilarious, and again, pointed to like, you're just not going to put artists in here, is they talked about the Authority. They can't mention Warren Ellis because you can't mention Warren Ellis anymore. And they also didn't mention Brian Hitch in the press release. So they were like, the Authority, created and written by drawn by nobody, I guess. Check out this comic book. So, well, very annoying.
Yes, that is annoying. Tom King did tweet about getting Bilkis some attention there.
After I tweeted, he saw my tweet.
Yeah, oh boy, you're in charge of Twitter, asshole. Take it easy.
I'm the king of Twitter.
No, you're not. No, he works
with Elon. He works directly with Elon.
I'm the guy who's been advising him on his marriages.
Oh my god,
truth.
You are horrible at your job, sir.
Not doing great so far.
Yeah.
The Supergirl, though, to answer the question, I feel like it is also going to be a light adaptation of the comic. It is not going to follow the story. It's going to be like, hey, what if there was a person from Krypton whose life sucked after they left the planet? It seems like what they're going with there. Not a lot of the very interesting, nuanced storytelling from both Tom and Bilkis in the comic.
This is a very quick one over on YouTube from All in the Game. Will there be a JL Dark projects eventually that J.J. Abrams was supposed to have been working on? The answer is no. They stopped doing those, along with a lot of other projects that got killed in the turnover. And we got one last one here from Ben the Border Collie. Marry, fuck, kill, sex, spies, and rock and roll. Let's take it away. Marry, fuck, kill, sex, spies, and rock and roll.
Well, you probably fuck sex, right?
No. Wow, that was the most Pete sentence I've ever heard. Hey, you probably fuck sex, though, right?
Come on, man. That's how it works, right?
No, you marry sex, you fuck rock and roll, of course, and you kill spies because they're liars.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I'd fuck them all, I guess.
Wow, Alex fucks them all. Pete's got his line.
Dude,
what are you on?
Like Dayquil or something? You were fucking.
Come on, get that snow off your butt, right, Patreon? You guys know what I'm talking about.
He's on day and Nyquil, just doubling down, baby.
You got the Dayquil to keep you up and the Nyquil to keep you down, and they just work nice.
Oh
together.
Boy,
I'm just on quills. It's all good. That's it for audience questions.
Quillins.
We're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 to Midtown Comics Online, or, of course, Long John Silver's for some reason. We just need a first hand up, a volunteer of any kind, somebody with headphones to not make our life a living hell. You know. Somebody to bravely step forward.
We did get Nat raising his hand.
Have we had him in the stream lately? It'd be fun to have him in the stream.
It's up to you, Pete. Do you want to invite Nat in to do trivia?
I definitely don't, but if he's the only... how about come with my kids? He hasn't been in before. Or that
oh,
person.
Wait. Oh, know. No. Oh, I already invited Nat. Okay, I'm going to invite Cal... with my kids in. Here we go.
Wow, you can't do that. That's fucked up.
That's fine. They're both coming in.
Oh, that's the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That'll not be absolutely
straight bullet says, you can still keep Nat. You're right. We can. We always do. He's our kept man.
Yep, pretty much. How are you guys doing while they're coming into the stream? What's going on?
Yeah, we haven't seen each other nearly as much.
Testing.
Hey, there he is. Hey, how are you?
Hello. All right. Nat's also going to come in at some point, but I'm going to give you over to Pete for some trivia.
All right, great. So today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Lisa Loring. R.I.P. Your dance was straight fire. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Which person has a trusty name, is a former boothman, and is the artist for Batman The Audio Adventures number 5 of 7? Is it A, Loyal T. Lucas, B, Anthony Marquez, or C, Justin's mom?
What? So my mom listens.
Oh, well, hey, just a shout out to Justin's mom, making sure she's still listening. And the correct, in case you're wondering, the correct answer is B, waiting on that answer.
I'm going to say B.
B is correct. That's right. Anthony Marquez, the former boothman, as well as an amazing artist, still doing it, doing his thing, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Question number two. Skybound is putting what popular webcomic into webcomic into print? Is it A, Ken Weatherwax, B, Extra Fabulous, or C, Normal Can Eat It? So A is not really an option, or you could go with B, Extra Fabulous. Yeah, nice job. Not many Garfield heads, I guess. Okay, moving on.
I'm here for Nirmal. She's heading to Abu Dhabi, if I know the rules.
You didn't... okay, all right. You think Nirmal's cool? Okay, not on that team. All right.
What?
Here we go. Last question. Who is getting into cereal? I'm sorry. I meant to say, who is getting a tabletop role-playing game? Is it A, Ray Kellogg, B, Marvel, or C, Alex Weirds Me Out?
I got a feeling it's going to be B.
B is correct. That's right. Marvel is getting a tabletop game. Very exciting. I know a lot of people were wondering when that was going to finally happen. The time is now.
I'm really curious what you mean by Marvel is getting a tabletop game, Pete.
That they're developing a tabletop role-playing game.
I think there's a bunch of them. I have several upstairs.
Alex.
No, don't push it. Don't poke the bear.
Okay. What are you hoping for?
I'm not sure. Would you like a gift card to Long John Silver's or a gift card to Midtown Comics?
I think I'll go with Midtown Comics.
All right.
Strong choice.
Shoot us an email, comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we'll get you set up. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, great to see you.
All right.
Thank
you. There we go. And Pete, what was your secret movie?
Well, it was actually a TV show, the 1964 original, The Addams Family.
Wow. Oh, yes, wow, of course. That was Wednesday Addams, the original Wednesday Addams, died this week. Yeah. Pete, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Nonsense has slowly overtaken every aspect of this parts of the show that you handle. Where's the future, though? Where's the next frontier in Pete nonsense? Because in trivia, for instance... C's crazy. Now, the other answer's crazy. There's only one correct answer. Are you going to start speaking in a foreign language? Are you going to start wearing a hat? Like, where's the next
start
step?
Wearing a hat? I
like
how that's
an option. Like a top hat or like a funny beret. I don't know. What's the next move for Pete's insanity?
Well, I mean, that's the fun thing about doing a podcast for over 13 years. You slowly go insane and people get to kind of witness it. You know what I mean?
I will say it is over 13 years, but it's many more years than that.
Yeah, it's also over 14, 15, and 16 years.
That's correct. Yeah. That's the fun thing about saying over and then picking a number that you're sure about. You know what I mean?
What? Number you're sure about is 13. I can't believe we've been doing this podcast for over 2 weeks. It's crazy. I just can't believe it.
Well, as we all know, comics are coming out all the time.
Oh, wow.
It was my
and
coughing.
That's the end.
What are
press
you guys looking forward to? Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Oh, man, thank you for asking. I'm really looking forward to Where the Monsters Lie, number one, as well as Batman Legends of Gotham, number one.
just real quick, it's called Where Monsters Lie, number one from Dark Horse Comics. It's from Kyle Starks, who we had on a couple of weeks ago talking about that book. Justin, what are you looking forward to?
Great question. There is a lot of stuff coming out. I have to shout out, I mean, there were a couple books that I really liked. Scarlet Witch number two, I thought was great.
Good call,
really
man.
Strong premise, putting Scarlet Witch in a very particular place. I really like the elements built around the character. I got to give a shout out to Star Trek number four, though, as well.
Wow.
This book is doing it all. If you have any passing interest in any Star Trek, but specifically Next Generation, I feel like that's the storytelling touchstone that this book is using. But they're going full, like, any dream character and situation is being pulled in here. Def, check it out.
I'll give a shout out to two comics here. Blood Tree, number one from Image Comics.
Yes, dude.
By Peter Jake DeMasi. Oh, God damn it.
God damn it. It's Nat Thompson. Oh, son of a bitch.
What's up, dude?
Oh, the show just went out the window.
I can't hear you at all. This is working really well, this crowdcast platform.
Here, just real quick. I'm going to remove you from this.
It's great to see Nat.
It is great to see Nat. Image Comics, Peter J. Tomasi writing a mystery series, so that's always interesting to me. And I will also give a shout out to Minor Threats, number four from Dark Horse Comics.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. Super villain series from Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, really enjoying it, and that's wrapping up this week. All of those titles and many more. Yes.
Real quick, do you think Nat was there was some kind of closet he was in front of? It almost looked like a dojo entrance.
I thought dojo too. I think he's at Eastman and Laird's shared home.
Oh man, that would be the coolest place to be.
I hope Tom Waltz isn't there, or I swear to God.
Oh my God.
Swear to God, right, Pete? Back me up here, Pete.
Nope, I'm not going to back you up.
Tom Waltz.
Tom Waltz is great.
Wow.
And all of those titles are going to be in our Stack podcast that drops Wednesday at 9 a.m.
They sure are.
And the Stack feed. And that's it for this week's show.
Yeah.
A couple of people want to thank Anish Patel for coming on. Check out Final Nine on sale now at Amazon. Also, Jeff Messer, check out Sex Spies and Rock and Roll Volume 3 on Zoop. Jason Inman, check out Super Best Friend on Kickstarter, as well as Geek History Lesson Podcast and all the other great things.
Also, we want to thank Comics with My Kids as well as Nat Thompson.
No, it was probably back here.
Great, get out of here.
I swear to God.
He's laughing. Oh, my God. Yeah. It is
a dojo. Next week on the show, Ari Gross. Oh, my God. Did you just drool on yourself?
I'm coughing a lot. Kev Krakow is going to be here to talk Super Scoop about Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, folks.
Take care of yourself. Hi, Justin's mom.
How dare you.
Very nice lady.
Yeah,